moment of your time for our friends at Jet Service Envelope. If you need to get any printing done, we encourage you to call our favorite local printer at 229-9335, 229-9335. And they're on the web at jetservice-envelope.com. If you need to get trifold brochures done, maybe you'd like to get your newsletter printed there as part of your business operation. Maybe you as an individual would like to get some new letterhead and envelopes to send those big thank you notes that you're going to send everybody who send you nice gifts. So we encourage you to give them a call at 229-9335 and on the web at jetservice-envelope.com. Let's give a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome this morning to Don Rendell. Don is the president of Vermont Gas, and he's kind enough to join us here live in our studios. Good morning. How's it going?
Good morning, Mark. It's going great. Thank you.
Your background previous to Vermont Gas, you worked at Green Mountain Power for many years. What'd you do there?
I spent 12 years, almost 13 years at Green Mountain Power. Served there as the general counsel, and then it's toward the end of my career there as a vice president, and then a senior vice president of financial and strategic affairs. Had a fairly broad management role there. Worked very closely with Mary Powell and the team.
What'd you do before that?
Before coming to Green Mountain Power, I was a lawyer.
I know it's going way back in time here.
It is. No? I was a lawyer in private practice for 15 years in Burlington, and spent 3 years as an assistant United States attorney as a federal prosecutor in Vermont.
What kind of law did you do when you were in private practice?
I did a variety of things over time. I had what I would call a general practice, focused mostly on commercial litigation disputes, and then toward the end of my private practice career, doing a fair amount of work in the regulated industry area, and in particular for Green Mountain Power.
Okay. Can you give me just a general sense here of the regulation of utilities in Vermont? Is it heavy, light, medium? How would you describe it?
It's very consistent with the regulation of utilities across the United States. All of the states have their own regulatory paradigms. They are more similar than they are different. In Vermont, we're a little bit different because we're fortunate enough to have the public service department as acting in the role of the public and consumer advocate, and the public service board acting in the role of an adjudicator as separate entities. In many states, those entities are combined into a single public service commission, which is typically divided a little bit, but much more unified. The reason I say that we're fortunate in Vermont to have that is because it really gives all of us the confidence that we have regulation at two levels in Vermont.
Wow, I mean, that does sound as though it would be difficult to make that work.
It's worked very well, certainly for the time that I've been involved in it. I would say that the leaders of those regulatory bodies have done a great job in managing through a lot of really interesting, a lot of really challenging things over the years in the utility industry, and it works quite effectively.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm thinking that it doesn't work effectively if you combine them. I mean, that sounds like there's no check and balance.
Well, typically a state will build some checks and balances inside those agencies, but the separations are not as distinct and clear as they are in Vermont.
How'd you wind up at Vermont Gas?
I had the opportunity to come when the board of directors asked me to consider it and thought about it briefly, but not. It didn't take me very long to make the decision that it would be a wonderful opportunity. It's a great company, serving Vermonters for 50 years. The company has grown from 1965 at something like 6,000 customers to almost 50,000 customers. The customers are incredibly happy. The product is a wonderful product that really makes a difference in people's lives. And the team there, the 145 employees there, are a fabulous group of people who are really dedicated. It was just a great opportunity.
What was the challenge for you?
Well, the challenge is is the project. The challenge is the expansion project into Addison and Rutland counties, which is a big infrastructure project for Vermont, an important infrastructure project for Vermont, and one that has all of the challenges that go along with big infrastructure projects in Vermont. The challenge of the regulatory permitting, the challenge of building it in a cost-effective way, the challenge of of working with families and communities who are impacted by the infrastructure along the way. You know, these are the challenges that we see in all of our things that we do in Vermont to advance the cause of economic development, to advance the cause of transportation, to advance the cause of renewable energy, to advance the cause of making Vermont a more affordable place to do business.
How is the decision made that it's a pipeline that's needed?
Well, the first step is for the is for the company to look at the pipeline as a good project for customers, as a good opportunity to bring the product and the services to new customers who don't have the opportunity to choose natural gas, then to present it to the Public Service Board, who makes the decision whether or not this kind of a project is in the public interest, and they have a very rigorous set of criteria that a project like this is reviewed under before a certificate of public good is issued, which allows the project to proceed. We also have a variety of permits that are required under the Agency of Natural Resources, under the Army Corps of Engineers, because this project is going in the ground and because it affects the natural environment.
Mm-hmm. I didn't phrase the question correctly. So how do you know that there was demand out there among customers for this product? Or is it really being driven by international paper and the people along the way are just going to happen to get the benefit?
Oh, no. Remember, the project is in two phases. And the first phase is to bring gas service to south to Middlebury and to the communities in between. And it is to serve a demonstrated demand for customers who are looking for the opportunity to convert from natural gas from fuel oil and propane, in the case of industrial customers or institutional customers, from number 6 fuel oil, which is a very dirty oil, to natural gas, which is much more economical certainly over the long term, and is much cleaner.
Okay. So there, when you say there is demonstrated demand, mm-hmm. that came to you how?
Well, we at Vermont Gas have a team that's out talking to not only to our existing customers but to prospective customers, and looking for opportunities to provide the service to customers. We've got some significant customers in the Middlebury area in particular that I'm thinking of, that we're very interested in having the opportunity to make the conversion. Agrimark, mm-hmm. Middlebury College, a number of the employers in the area who use natural gas in either in their processes or have a big heating load.
Okay. We'll talk about the cost increases here in just a moment. But does phase one and phase two, tell me how they're connected, if at all.
Great question, Mark.
I mean, obviously, I'm not an idiot. No, you need the first pipeline to get the second pipeline. But do they depend on one another?
The yes and no. They depend on one another in this sense. To your point, phase one is, you need phase one to get to phase two.
Important to phase two.
Phase two, Phase two is a pipeline that is going to serve customers along the route, but also primarily to serve International Paper and their paper plant in Ticonderoga, which is burning number 6 fuel oil now, and the opportunity there was to get them on a much more economical and much cleaner fuel source. IP is paying for that pipeline and is also paying for a portion of the infrastructure on phase one, which will make it more economical for Vermont customers. So the connection there is that it makes the whole project more beneficial to Vermonters. IP is making a big commitment to Vermont, a big financial commitment to Vermont to allow this to go forward. Yeah, so that's where it is.
It sounds as though International Paper is asking questions at this point, not necessarily totally on board here with the second part of this. Does that mean that if the second part doesn't get built, that you don't build the first part?
First, International Paper, great business partner. Now I'm just getting involved here, and it's a new relationship for me. But I must say that it's a great team, and they've been great to deal with. They're asking the same questions that we're asking, which is, okay, let's make sure we know how much this is going to cost, and let's make sure this is going to work. Would we build phase one if for some reason we did not proceed with phase two? Yes, we would. That it's still a solid project for Vermont on its own two legs.
Maybe put these on. 244-1777 is our local number. Toll free 877-291-8255. We're talking with Don Rendell. He's the president of Vermont Gas. Let's go to Plainfield. Will, good morning.
Hey, Mark. Thanks for letting me call in.
Yep.
Don, it's interesting to hear you talk about how y'all assess public demand for this project, because I actually spent a lot of time going to the initial outreach meetings that Vermont Gas is doing. Of course, this is before your time, and obviously the project is under new leadership now, but I went to a lot of meetings in Middlebury. I've been to meetings in Cornwall and Moncton, in Shoreham, and I've actually seen a lot of public outcry from the people in those towns who don't want this. I'm just wondering how you all can claim that you have demand from anything more than really just Agrimark and International Paper, especially when a majority of the gas for this entire project is going to be going to International Paper. And in light of the fact that you have publicly announced recently that you're starting to look at gas islands as a way to serve these businesses and not the residents, it's pretty clear that the real demand is just from industrial consumers, and it's not about low-income Vermonters having access to a more affordable heating source. And in particular, I'm thinking about the town of Cornwall. They actually have not signed an MOU with you. You have not reached an agreement in principle with them yet. It actually looks like the town is probably leaning towards not moving forward in that MOU. And you didn't offer them gas to start with. They've actually... You're kind of trying to buy them out by offering them gas. Phase two is all about International Paper. So I'm just wondering if you could talk about your public outreach process and how it might be different in phase three.
All right. Thanks for your call.
Thanks for the question. I'll start with the question. That is, what will we do as we think about phase three, which is ultimately getting natural gas to Rutland County and to the city and town of Rutland? We're working really hard every day to work with our families and our communities who are both impacted by the project and who stand to benefit from the project by having the choice to convert to natural gas. The company certainly has a challenge in terms of the public perception of how we did that up until now. What I can tell you going forward is that we are absolutely committed to doing the right thing by families, doing the right thing by communities, doing the right thing by the state in advancing the cause of bringing this clean fuel source to more Vermonters. There is certainly a strong demand for natural gas service everywhere that I go. And I'm new on the job. I've got a lot more work to do in reaching out to customers and communities, and will do that. But what I can tell you is that, over the last whatever it is, 25 years, Vermont Gas has grown from something like 16 or 20,000 customers to almost 50,000 customers, expanding incrementally, mostly in Franklin and Chittenden counties. And I talk to customers every day, and I talk to community members every day who tell me about customers every day who are thrilled to be able to convert to natural gas, who are thrilled with the service they get with natural gas, and it makes me proud to be part of a company that's providing that service. That said, yes, we've got a lot of families, a lot of individuals in Addison County who are passionate in their views that this project is not a good idea. And our job, my job, is to listen to those folks, to understand what their concerns are, to accommodate those concerns where we can, and to create an environment where everyone's listened to, where passionate views are allowed to be expressed, and where the decision on policy, which rests with the Public Service Board, is one that is well informed, and we aim for consensus. We'll never get to 100% consensus on a project like this, because we will have folks that don't want this project for a whole variety of reasons. Do I hope that we will have a respectful dialogue? Am I committed on our side to have a respectful dialogue? You bet we are.
Did the company, has the company, it almost sounds like you're changing something here. Was there, were they not doing it the right way before you got there?
Well, you know, Mark, the this is the way I'd say it. The company has a public relations challenge. There are all kinds of reasons why we're in that fix. The challenge is to be very focused on understanding what those who are passionate about their views are saying, understanding why they're saying it, and finding ways to find as much common ground as we can. A great example is the town of Cornwall. You know, when I showed up to start a transition early in November, the discussions between, there were no discussions between Green Mountain Power and, excuse me, Vermont Gas Systems and Cornwall. In the time since, in December, we had a team that did a great job sitting down with the leaders in Cornwall. We reached an agreement in principle with the select board. That agreement will ultimately be put to a vote by the town, and that's great. And it's an agreement that I'm confident that the leaders in Cornwall think is a fair deal, is a square deal, and is a positive outcome for the town of Cornwall, which includes, by the way, serving almost 50% of the households in Cornwall with natural gas, if they choose it. And let me just emphasize that, if they choose it, because we're not making anybody do this. This is about giving Vermont families and businesses another choice.
Mm-hmm. Talking with Don Rundle, he's the president of Vermont Gas. Let's talk money here for a moment. The company has now asked the Public Service Board to basically put on hold consideration of this phase two. This is after the pipeline figures almost twice the initial estimate for the 43-mile line from Colchester to Vergennes, which increased from $86 million up to $121 million, now up to $154 million. How on earth do you get it that wrong?
It's $154 million based on the best estimate protocol that we have, and based on an incredibly thorough review over many weeks by a team that has helped other Vermont infrastructure projects figure out how much they're going to cost, and in particular it's a team that has helped Velco along the way, the electric transmission company here in Vermont. What I can tell you is this is where we are. I'm focused on looking through the windshield here, Mark, and understanding where we are, understanding where we want to go, and understanding how we can get there in the most cost-effective way for both our existing customers, for new customers, for our communities, and for our state. What I can tell you is that I've got my team focused on those priorities and not so much focused on what did we do wrong before.
Okay, I hear you on that. If I were you, I'd do the same thing. But if you're looking at the windshield front here, it also helps to look in the rear view mirror and figure out where you're coming from. If I'm the public and you're trying to build confidence with me, and you have basically a doubling of a cost of a project where nothing's really changed, I'm having a little credibility with you as you're looking at the front windshield here.
Well, fair enough. And to be fair, good for you. Every vehicle should have a good rearview mirror in it. We just want to understand where we want to be focusing our attention, right? And the rearview mirror is there to do that check, that look back, focusing primarily on what's out in front and how to get there in the best way, whatever it is. It will be important. We will have the opportunity to go back and look and say, what happened? We're taking this one step at a time, and it's important for us to do this in the right order. And the right order is, let's figure out where we are today. Let's figure out how we're going to move forward from here. And we'll have plenty of opportunity over time, and we'll do that partly in the regulatory process of saying, okay, how did we get here, and what happened in between?
So you can't really explain to listeners today what happened? I mean, it's just so far off.
The... Uh, The estimate was off. No doubt the estimate was off. I'm sure there are a variety of reasons why the estimate was off. They have to do with the what cost inputs were used in the first instance. I'm sure they have to do with how the project was scoped and scaled in the original planning. You know, if you look over the history of Vermont, if you look across the country, and you look at infrastructure projects and how much they cost to do, I'm confident what you'll see is that when you look at projects that have, to use the phrase, caught an edge, where they've been controversial, where they've taken a lot more time than folks thought they would take, where they've involved a lot more scrutiny and a lot more analysis, those are the kinds of projects where the costs grow from what you expect. And we've all been in that place, right? We've all been in that place whether you're renovating your kitchen or building a new garage, thinking that the project's going to cost one thing, and then getting into it and figuring out that it's going to cost a lot more for a whole variety of reasons.
Okay, good. I'm glad you made that point, because usually it is when you get into the project and the contractor's already ripped up your house and they say, well, oh, by the way, there are all these other additional costs. That's not what happened here. This is cost estimates that are based on the contractor not really having ripped up the kitchen.
Right, which
makes it even more, you know, sort of incredible, I think, for people in the public to say, how are you off by this magnitude?
Well, first, let me say that we're fortunate that we're in a place where we're talking about this as an estimate and not coming in and saying, we told you it was going to be 85 and we spent 150. We're not there. That's that we're out in front of it to that extent. Now we're at a much different stage here than we were when the project was presented. It's a little bit like having the contractor come in and having ripped out the walls and said, "Oh boy, we got a lot of work to do here." We've got some of that involved here, and it's a whole stew of factors, Mark.
Okay. Let me ask this question respectfully. If you can't really describe, though, what it is that happened that made the cost go up so much, why should anybody listening have any confidence in this 154 number?
Great question. And we're asking that to ourselves. It's our obligation to be confident that the number is a number that we can deliver this project for. It's our obligation to look at this number and say, and by the way, it's a number that we think it's going to cost. The number is divided into a couple of parts. It's like any good construction estimate. It's an estimate that says the cost to complete this project, about $138 million, and about $15 million or $16 million in so-called contingency. And that's to reflect the uncertainties and the risks around pinning a number on the wall when the project still has to be completed, and there are uncertainties as you go through it. This is a big project, and it involves a lot of moving parts. When we settled on the number in December, we settled on having confidence. We our team and our experts have confidence that this is a reliable number. It's an estimate. It's a reliable estimate. It's an estimate that has been proven in its methodology through some of the work that the team has done other places in Vermont, in particular in Velco. It's an estimate that's involved an incredible amount of brain power by an awful lot of people for us to have confidence that we got it right in coming up with something that is reliable and that our customers, that our regulators, that our communities can depend on.
The head of the Department of Public Service, Chris Recchia, said yesterday that while their department has supported this pipeline in the past, with this cost increase, it's very close, was the term he used, very close to not being economically supportable. What would you say to that?
It's certainly closer. We expect to demonstrate that the project still has significant public benefits. We've promised to make a filing with the Public Service Board. We'll be making a filing later today that walks through the estimate, that walks through the benefits. The benefits in energy savings over the life of the project, the benefits in construction jobs, the benefits in economic development that an infrastructure project like this brings, and balancing that off against the cost of the project, and what we'll show is that the project still remains beneficial for Vermont as it was earlier, albeit at a slimmer margin.
Mm-hmm. You've been around before. I mean, this isn't the first time you've fallen off the turnip truck here. how confident can you possibly be that $154 million number stays through the entire construction? I mean, really?
Well, Mark, the confidence I have is that it's as reliable an estimate as we could possibly do. That I'm confident of. Good for you. It is an estimate, and we want to keep our eye on the ball and understand that it's an estimate. That said, we have an incredible incentive to deliver this project in as cost-effective a way as we can, as inexpensively as we can. That's an incentive that will certainly be good for our customers. It'll be good for the company. There's nothing that we would like to achieve more than delivering this project at a cost that is well inside of $154 million. That said, we're in a regulatory process where it's our obligation, it's our responsibility to show the Public Service Board, to show the Public Service Department what we think this project could cost, because that's how they make the determination that it's in the public interest. So our job is to say, this is how much we think it could cost, so that they can manage the exercise of doing their evaluation of whether this is good for Vermont. And then it's our obligation, our responsibility to deliver it, and our incentive to deliver it as inexpensively as we can.
We'll take a quick commercial break, come back, continue our discussion, take some more calls this morning for Don Rendell. He's the president of Vermont Gas. We'll be back right after this.
This Thursday, Governor Peter Shumlin will deliver his annual budget address to the Vermont State Legislature. WDEV will provide anchored coverage live from the Vermont State House in Montpelier beginning at 2 p.m. Radio Vermont's live broadcast of the governor's budget address to the legislature is brought to you by the National Life Group. For over 150 years, a great company, great people, and a great place to work. The Governor's Budget Address, Thursday afternoon at 2, live on WDEV.
When I first started in the car business, customers would complain that buying a used car was too much work. They could look in the paper, but even today, some dealers ask more for a used car than they do for a new one. They could drive all over town to find a car, then track down a salesperson to get a price, or today you can go online, but many dealers require you to enter your personal information to get a quote for their special internet price. Well, at Midstate, we set out to change all that. Our used car department has been chosen as the best place to buy a used car for 2 years in a row. It really is simple. We clearly mark the price on every car, or you can go online at MidstateDodge.com, where you'll find the price, several pictures, and Carfax vehicle history reports for every car. Now, here's the best part. We employ state-of-the-art software to compare our prices to other dealers in real time and adjust them constantly to ensure our prices are not just competitive, but some of the best prices available. Come experience the difference. If you don't have the best overall experience, make sure you ask for me, Mitchell J., or my daughter, Jessica. We're in the store every day or online at MidstateDodge.com.
Everyone here at Auto Craftsman loves their animal family members. We also love having our customers' pets come and visit while their car is in for service. We know that a lot of dogs and cats are still waiting for their forever homes and are grateful that there are places like the Central Vermont Humane Society that help make that perfect match. For the month of January, Auto Craftsman is offering $10 off the labor of any service, and afterwards we'll give you $10 Auto Craftsman money good for your next visit, and enter your name in a drawing for a free rust-proofing undercoating service. All you have to do is bring a donation off their wish list, which is on our website, or write a check out to CVHS for at least $5. Call 223-2253 to make an appointment, or go to our website at autocraftsman.com.
Tired of grocery shopping at huge supermarkets with no personality? This is Tommy Huron, and I invite you to shop our well-stocked, right-sized family market in Waitsfield. Custom-cut meats, fresh seafood and produce, gourmet cheeses, regular and organic groceries, and over 1,000 wines. Come and see Jeff and Bill in the meat department, Tana and produce, Gary in seafood, Nate in the deli, or Nancy and Liz in our incredible wine department. Family run for over 70 years. Mahuron Supermarket, Village Square Shopping Center in Waitsfield.
Maplefields and Irving want you to ski for free. Fill up three times with Irving gasoline at their newest Maplefield store in downtown Newport, just off I-91 in St. Johnsbury, or any other Maplefield Irving locations, and you'll be eligible to receive a buy one, get one free lift pass at great local mountains like Burke, Jay Peak, Smugs, and Bolton Valley. With these new Maplefield locations, a great cup of coffee is never far away when you're on your way for an exciting day at the slopes. Come see them during their grand opening celebration in St. Johnsbury on January 22nd, 23rd, or 24th for awesome specials and prizes.
Back to continue our discussion. We've been talking with Don Rendell, the president of Vermont Gas. We were just talking about the cost increases. I want to go back to one point here before we go back to the phone, Don. You were mentioning a couple of minutes ago, you said that because of the scrutiny the project had, and a couple of other words you used, that had increased the cost. Are the people that are opposing this project increasing the cost of the project?
They're not increasing the cost of the project. The project is as I said, it's a big project. It's got a lot of moving parts on it. One of the moving parts is time, and the longer it takes to complete a project like this, ultimately that adds cost pressure to the project. It's so important that we have an effective dialogue. It's so important that we have effective scrutiny. It's so important that we allow the regulatory agencies that have jurisdiction over this, the Public Service Board, the Public Service Department, the Agency of Natural Resources, do their jobs effectively. So I'm very confident that we're doing the right thing and that our regulators are doing the right thing. I think it's important for us to understand that projects like this, as they take more time, that it's not unusual, it shouldn't be a surprise to anyone, that has cost pressure.
Let's go to Orwell. James, good morning.
Hi, Mark. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question for Don. Hi, Don. I welcome you to the pipeline discussion that we've been having for a long time here. I think you answered my first question, Don, and the question was, would Vermont Gas consider not restarting Phase 2? And I think you answered that. But let me go on, and I got two parts of the question, or two more parts, and let me get that in. And then, first, I'm wondering this totally because of the cost, and we've done a lot of discussion about that this morning. Specifically, my question is, and the two very specific questions, could you give me, or us, the approximate cost per unit of natural gas delivered through the pipe versus the cost per unit of compressed natural gas delivered by truck? Now, I'm asking that because two reasons. When I read newspaper reports about a gas island in Middlebury in the fall, which I don't think has started up yet, but I think it's ready to go, Vermont Gas was quoted at saving those customers there between 20 and 40%. And because IP is probably the giantest, biggest, account that you have or may ever have, they would certainly get a good deal. The second is, I'm having trouble because in the fall, there was a protective order issued by PSB, I think, that would exempt you and IP from public records requests from the documents dealing with IP and Vermont Gas. And so my question is, could you make these two figures available and override if it is in that protection order so that the people in Orwell, the people in Shoreham, the people in Cornwall can make a qualified decision on whether this is cost-effective?
All right, let me have them answered. Thank you, James.
Sure. Thanks, James. To your first question, the cost of delivering natural gas through CNG, through compressed natural gas, essentially delivering it by truck to the customer, or by truck to a pipeline loop that then delivers to the customer, versus the cost of delivering gas to customers through a pipeline system like the one that serves our 50,000 customers. Is it's compressed natural gas, better than oil and propane, not as good as a pipeline. Great question. I don't have the figures right in front of me. What I can tell you is that CNG provides that benefit in between, and that's one of the reasons that it's so exciting a business for Vermont. And you know, of course, as you know, we're leaders in that industry with the advent of NG Advantage and all the great work that they're doing, and they're partnering with us in delivering to Middlebury.
Waiving the documents.
As I said earlier, IP's been a great business partner, and it's really important that we are able to have a good constructive business partnership and business relationship with IP, and that means our ability to have to have candid discussions, to share information in a candid way, because we're negotiating. It's a negotiation. They're a counterparty, and it's really important that as with any business dealings between private parties, that we have the ability to do that without having to do it in the newspaper every day.
So that's a no.
Yeah.
Let's go to Moncton. Hi, Jane. Good morning. Hello, Jane. Hi. Go ahead.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I would like to ask Mr. Rendell, you've been off so much in your estimates on how much this is going to cost, yet your estimates of how much the savings to Vermonters has kind of been pretty static. It's gone down a little bit, but I would like to know, I would like to have you address that issue, the fact that how can we trust that your estimates of savings can be anywhere near accurate if you could be this far off? And also, we've noticed a lot of exaggerations. And the second part would be, because I'm a landowner, I'm wondering, I hear more rhetoric about how you're going to reach out and deal with communities, yet we still have not been made a final any offer, even an opening offer on an easement agreement on our property.
Okay, let me have him answer this. Thank you for your call, Jane.
Thanks, Jane. Mm-hmm. So that's three questions, and I'll take the last one first. Jane, if we haven't reached out in an effective way, I'd like to talk to you about that, and would be happy to have you give me a call. And we can talk about that either online or off the line in terms of how to get a hold of me. But I think that's really important to me that we are reaching out to families along the way and doing that effectively.
How can you trust the cost savings if you were so off on the initial
estimate?
Yeah,
and that's a great question. The cost savings are an estimate, and yep, they're based on a whole variety of assumptions. We've tried to use conservative assumptions in what we're doing, and we're not here to exaggerate the savings. We're here to think about what those savings could actually be over time, and you know the proof is in the pudding here, and that is what customers do when we bring the service to them, which is they sign up, and they sign up because they're able to save money, and they're saving real money, and when I talk to people out there in the communities that we serve, what I hear is for those who have natural gas, it is we're thrilled to have it, and for those who don't, it is I wish that we could get it, and that demonstrates to me that the savings numbers are real.
New York State just banned fracking, and a lot of opponents of this project point to that this is fracked gas and it's not good for the environment.
Gas that is produced using fractured hydraulics or whatever they call it, is an integral part of the gas system that we have throughout North America. It is so important as we look at how gas and other petroleum products, oil and propane, are produced, that we as a country, that we as a continent, get our heads around effective regulation and an incredibly effective enforcement to make sure that those who are in the business of producing natural gas, of producing oil, of producing propane, are extracting it and producing it in a way that is environmentally responsible. And we've got a long way to go there as a country. I'm hopeful that the EPA will advance some new rules very soon on in particular on methane leakage in oil and gas production, and will stand with every environmental group in the country to will stand with them to advocate for effective regulation and effective enforcement of those regulations to ensure that our natural gas supplies, that our oil supplies are produced, extracted and produced in a safe way and in an environmentally responsible way.
You say that we as a country have a way to go here. Is the fracking currently today not safe?
Well, what I hear mostly is about the environmental issues around fracking and the concern that folks have around how fracking occurs, how it's occurring in communities, and what the impacts are on those communities, and what the impacts are on the environment, what the impacts are on greenhouse gases. And I think we've got a lot of improvement to do there, to demonstrate that we've got effective rules in place and that the rules are being followed every day by everybody who's doing it.
What about today? I mean, is it safe today to be doing this?
Is it safe today to be doing this? I'm confident that in the main that most producers are doing it in an irresponsible way. I think that we've got to prove that. We've got to demonstrate it. To your point earlier, Mark, how can we be confident that that's happening? How can we be confident with effective regulations and effective enforcement? Just as we've done with air and water for over 40 years.
Thanks for coming in this morning. Appreciate it very much. Don Rendles, the president of Vermont Gas.
Thank you, Mark.
That's going to wrap things up for today. I'll be down at the State House coming up tomorrow. Actually, I'll be down at the State House coming up in just a couple of hours. Governor Shumlin will be giving his budget address starting at 2 p.m. We encourage you to check it out live right here on these great radio stations. This is FM 96.1 WDEV Warren, broadcasting from the top of Sugar Bush, and AM 550 WDEV Waterbury Montpelier. News is coming your way next.
AP Radio News. I'm Rita Foley. We are learning more about two men from Ohio.